Chapter 29. The Lift. The Spiral Staircase. Jeff. The Lord High. The Queen of Empis will do her duty. 1. Iota returned to the wheel, and now the resistance was so great that he grunted with each quarter turn. He moved it half a dozen times, the last only a few inches. Then, from somewhere overhead, a soft chime sounded. It echoed and died away. Leah motioned I to step back. She pointed to the platform. She pointed to us, then raised her arms and made an air hug.
All of us? I asked.
Is that what you mean? Close together? She nodded, then managed a final act of ventriloquism, clutching her throat as she did it. Tears of pain spilled down her cheeks. I didn't want to imagine her throat lined with barbed wire, but I couldn't help it.
Dog. Middle. Now.
We humans stepped on. Radar held back, crouching and looking worried. As soon as our weight hit the platform, it began to rise.
Radar!
I shouted.
Jump! Jump!
For a second, I thought she was going to be left behind. Then, her hindquarters bunched and she leaped. Her leash was long gone, but she was still wearing her collar. Iota grabbed it and hauled her on board. We shuffled around, making room for her in the middle. She sat, looked up at me, and whined. I knew how she felt. There was hardly room for all of us, even crammed together, backs to bellies. The floor fell away. At 6 feet, we might have been able to jump without being hurt. At 12, we might have been able to jump without being killed. Then it was 18 feet, and forget about it. I was on one side with his toes over the edge. I was on the other, also with at least a quarter of my feet in open air. Eris, Jaya, and Leah were grouped around Radar, Leah actually straddling her. Now the floor had to be 70 feet below us. The air was dusty, and I thought if I started sneezing, I might tumble off, which would be an ignominious end for the promised prince. The voices whispered and twined. One I heard clearly said,
"Your father's brain is eating itself."
Jaya began to sway and closed her eyes.
"I don't like the high," she said. "I never liked the high, even the barn loft. Oh, I can't do this. Let me off."
She began to struggle, raising her arms to push Eris, who bumped into Iota, almost sending him off the edge. Radar gave a bark. If she panicked and started to move around, Leah would fall, and me.
"Hold that woman, Eris," Iota growled. "Keep her still before she kills us all."
Eris reached across Radar and over Leah, who bent her knees in a half crouch. Eris got her arms around Jaya.
"Close your eyes, dear. Close your eyes and pretend this is all a dream."
Jaya closed her eyes and seized Eris around the neck. The air was colder up here, and I was slimy with sweat. I began to shiver.
"Sick,"
whispered a voice that wafted past me like a diaphanous scarf.
"Sick and slip, slip and fall."
Below me, the stone floor was now just a small square in the gloom. The wind was blowing, and the sometimes stone, sometimes glass sides of the spire creaked.
"Sick,"
the voices whispered.
"Sick and slip, slip and fall. Fall for sure."
We went on rising, which seemed insane to me with Flight Killer somewhere below us, but it was too late to change course now. I could only hope that Leah knew what she was doing. We passed among thick struts of dressed stone, topped with inches of dust, and now there was green glass on either side of us. Black shapes twined sinuously through it. The sides were narrowing in. And then, suddenly, the platform stopped. Above us, the spire narrowed into darkness. I could make out something up there, maybe a landing, but it was at least 40 feet above the stopped platform, where we stood crowded around my dog, who was ready to bolt at any second. Below us were leagues of empty air.
"What's happening?"
Harris asked.
"Why did we stop?"
Her voice was thin with terror. Jaya jerked in her arms and bumped Iota again. He waved his arms wildly to keep his balance.
"How the fuck we're supposed to get down is a better question," he growled. "This is what you call a predicament."
Leo was looking up anxiously, tracing the silver cable with her eyes.
"This ain't half a way to end the story,"
I said, and actually laughed.
400 feet up, and crammed together like cattle.
I thought of shouting rise in the name of Leah of the Galleon, knew it was absurd, and was about to try it anyway when the platform jerked back to life. This time, I was the one waving my arms to keep from plunging over the side. I think I would have gone anyway if Leah hadn't grabbed me around the neck. Her grip was strong enough to choke my air off for a few seconds, but under the circumstances, it would have been churlish to complain. Radar scrambled to her feet, and we all swayed in unison. The platform actually seemed to be shrinking around us. The curved walls of the spire were now almost close enough to touch. I looked at the approaching landing and prayed for it to come in reach before the lift stopped again, or started to plunge. Neither happened. The platform stopped at the landing with a gentle bump. There was another chime, louder, up here, and Radar scrambled off, thumping Leah a good one with her rear end and sending her into Eris and Jaya. They teetered over the blackness. I shoved Leah with one hand and Jaya with the other. Iota pushed Eris and we tumbled onto the landing on top of one another, like clowns out of the little car at the circus. Iota began to laugh. I joined him. Eris and Jaya also began to laugh, although Jaya was weeping, too. There was a fair amount of hugging. Leah put her face down on Radar's back and reached out with one hand. I took it and squeezed it. She squeezed back.
"I'd like to know something," Iota said. "I'd like to know where in fuck we are and why in fuck we came here."
I pointed to Leah and shrugged. Her deal, not mine. 2. The landing was small and there was no railing, but we were able to stand in a line, which was safer than being crammed together on a 6x6 platform of solid gold. And that platform now began to sink back down to the floor, leaving us stranded up here. Leah pointed to her right. Iota was first in line, and he began to sidle that way, looking down at the blackness of the drop and the descending lift platform. The rest of us followed, Jaya looking resolutely across to the far side of the spire. We were holding hands like a bunch of paper dolls. Probably not wise, since if one of us lost their balance, we might all go over the edge, but that didn't stop us. At the end of the landing was a low arch. Iota bent, let go of Eris's hand, and duck walked through. Radar went next, then Jaya and Leah. I came last, sparing one final look down at the descending platform, which was now almost out of sight. There was another curved catwalk on the other side of the arch, and another chasm beyond it. We had ascended almost to the top of the central spire. We were now at the top of the one on the right. Leah made her way to the head of our little parade, each of us holding her around the waist as she passed. I could hear the rapid chuff of breath in and out of her nose. I wondered how much strength it had taken her to vocalize as much as she had, and when she'd last eaten. By now, she had to be going on sheer guts. But then that was true of all of us.
"Aren't you glad you came?"
I whispered to Jaya as we began to move again, now shuffle-stepping around the top of this second spire.
"Shut up, my prince," she whispered back.
The catwalk ended at another arch on the far side of the spire, this one blocked by a wooden door no more than 5 feet high. Magic words weren't needed. Leah ran a bolt at the top and used both hands to lift a double latch. There was no doubt she'd been up here before. I could imagine her and Eldon as children, the runts of the litter and largely forgotten, exploring a palace that had to sprawl over 70 or 100 acres, finding its ancient secrets, daring death on that platform. How had they ever been able to turn the wheel that powered it? And God knew how many other dangerous places. It was a wonder they hadn't been killed on one of their safaris. The corollary to that thought was that it would have been better for all of us if Eldon had been. Once the door was open, we could hear the sound of the wind outside. Its constant low moan made me think of the sounds Hannah had made as she held the body of her slain daughter. The landing beyond the door was only big enough for one person at a time, or perhaps, I thought, for two small, curious children standing close together. Leah went first. I followed and saw we were at the top of a narrow barrel that seemed to drop all the way to ground level. On our left was a wall of stone blocks. On the right was curving green glass with those capillaries of black floating lazily upward. The glass was thick and dark, but enough daylight strained through for me to see the way down. A narrow stairway turning on itself in a tight spiral. There was no railing. I reached out and touched the glass with my fingers. The result was startling. Those black tendrils drew together in a cloud and flocked toward my touch. I pulled my hand back in a hurry, and the black threads resumed their lazy perambulations. But those things see us, or sense us, I thought. And they're hungry. Don't touch the glass wall, I said to the others. I don't think they can get through, but there's no sense in riling them up.
What is rilling?
Jaya asked.
Never mind, just don't touch the glass wall.
Leah, now half a dozen steps below me, made that twirling gesture again, like an ump signaling a home run. We began our descent. 3. The stairs were better than the elevator platform, less scary, but still dangerous. They were steep, and the constant circling made us all, with the possible exception of Radar, dizzy. Looking down the center of the spiral was a bad idea. It made the vertigo worse. After Leah and I came Radar, Iota, and Jaya. Eris brought up the rear. After a descent of 100 steps or so, we came to another of those low doors. Leah passed it, but I was curious. I peered into a long room, musty and dusty, filled with dim shapes, some covered with sheets. The idea that I was looking into an enormous attic bemused me at first, but then I realized that every palace must have one. They just don't bother to put it in the storybooks. After descending further, the glass wall thicker, the light dimmer, we came to another door. I opened it and saw a corridor lit with a few guttering gas jets. Many more were out. A crumpled and dusty tapestry lay abandoned on the floor.
Leah, hold up.
She turned to me and raised her hands, palms out.
Are there more doors as we go down, opening on different parts of the palace? Living quarters, perhaps?
She nodded, then made the twirling gesture again, the one that said we had to push on.
Not yet. Do you know of an apartment that's lit by electricity rather than gaslight?
What I actually said, I think, was, do you know of chambers? But that wasn't why she looked puzzled. She didn't know electricity any more than Jaya had known riling, as in riling them up.
Magic lights?
I said. That, she understood. She raised 3 fingers, considered, then raised 4.
Why are we stopping?
Jaya asked.
I want to get down.
Hold your water, Iota said. I know what he's about. Or at least I think I do.
I thought of asking Leah if Mr. Bowditch had installed the magic lights and the generator to power them, but I already knew. Cowards bring presents. But based on what I'd seen of the old-fashioned Jenny, he'd done it long ago, probably when he'd still been Adrian instead of Howard. One of the suites graced with slave-driven electricity was almost certainly the private quarters of the late king and queen. But that wasn't the one I was interested in. Leah didn't just point down the tight spiral of the stairway. She jabbed her finger repeatedly, She had only two things in mind: finding Flight Killer before he could open the dark well, and assuring herself that the usurper wasn't her brother. I cared about those things as much as she did, but I cared about something else, too. I had been in the particular hell of Deep Malene, after all, as had Iota and the two women who had elected to come with us. "Not yet, Leah, hear me now. Do you remember a suite of rooms, one equipped with the magic lights, that had a long blue velvet sofa?" She made no sign that she did, but I remembered something else. "What about a table with a tiled surface? The tiles make a picture of a unicorn that looks almost as if it's dancing. Do you remember that?" Her eyes widened, and she nodded. "Is there a door from these stairs that opens on that part of the residences?" She put her hands on her hips, sword on one, dagger on the other, and looked at me with exasperation. She jabbed her finger downward. I fell into the vernacular I'd learned in Malene.
"Na, na, my lady. Say if we can enterwise that part from here. Tell me."
Reluctantly, she nodded.
"Then take us there. We've still got lots of daylight."
I might actually have said a moit of daylight.
"And there's other business than yours."
"What business?"
Jaya asked from behind me.
"I think that's where we'll find the Lord High." "Then we must go there," Eris said. "He has much to answer for."
Fucking right, I thought.
4.
We passed three more doors on our continuing descent, and I began to think Leah meant to bypass Kellen's cozy nest, his electrified cozy nest. Then she stopped at another door, opened it, and took a startled step backward. I steadied her with one hand and drew Mr. Bowditch's .45 with the other. Before I could look through the door, Radar hurried past me, wagging her tail. Leah put her palm to her forehead, not in salute, but in the distracted gesture of a woman who feels her troubles will never end. Crouching in the corridor, just past the point where the swinging door would have knocked it over, was the snab. Radar nosed it between its antennae, tail wagging. Then she dropped on her belly and the snab hopped aboard. Iota was looking over my shoulder, fascinated.
"You do get around, Sir Snab, don't you? How did you find us?"
I had an idea about that. Claudia had been able to hear the snab in her head, and maybe that ability was a two-way street. If so, the snab might have been tracking us with a kind of telepathic GPS. It was a crazy idea, but any crazier than a mermaid with a similar ability, or a youth-renewing sundial? As for how El Snabbo had shown up here, my guess was that Leah wasn't the only one who knew the palace's secret ways, and a cricket, even a big one, could go places a human couldn't. That I'd observed for myself in Deep Malene.
"Why is it here?"
Eris asked.
"To guide us?"
If so, it had made a wasted trip, because I knew where we were, although Aaron had brought me a different way. Same wide corridor, with the gas jets enclosed in fancy glass chimneys, same tapestries, same marble statues, although the one that had reminded me of Cthulhu had fallen to the floor and broken in two, which, in my opinion, was no great loss. I put my hands on my knees and lowered my face until it was almost touching the snabs. It looked back at me fearlessly from its place on the nape of Radar's neck.
"Why are you here? Were you waiting for us? What's your deal?"
Claudia had said something about having to clear her mind. I tried to clear mine, and I think I did a pretty good job of it given the circumstances and the time pressure we were laboring under, but if the snab was sending telepathic messages, they weren't on my wavelength. They were on someone's, however. Jaya said,
"Prince Charlie, the snab wishes you well and hopes for our success."
I didn't think she was making it up exactly, but guessed it might be wish fulfillment. Then she said something that changed my mind. Iota listened and began to grin, revealing significant holes in his dental equipment.
"Really?"
he said.
"I'll be dipped in shit."
Not what he said, what I heard. Let me take care of this, Charlie. May I? As a favor to the one who spent much longer in Deep Malene than you did? I gave him permission. I'd take it back, if I could, and use the 45, but I didn't know. The snab didn't either, or it surely would have told Jaya. Thinking of that helps, but not enough. In the whole history of the world, all the worlds, not knowing never changed a single mistake. 5. There was a good-sized hole in the wainscoting behind the pedestal where the statue of the tentacled horror had stood, which made me remember the defective gas jet in Deep Malene. A draft moaned in the hollow spaces behind the wall, and bad-smelling air puffed out.
"That's where the little lord came from. Sure as cream makes butter," Iota said.
He had taken the lead in our procession, Leah close behind him. I tried to walk beside her, but she pulled ahead without giving me a glance. Raids took her place, the snab still mounted on her back. Jaya and Eris brought up the rear. We passed the gold-framed mirrors, I remembered, and came at last to the mahogany door that gave on the Lord High's apartment. Because it was one of the few with electric power, I guessed the chambers might once have belonged to Ludum, King Jan's chancellor, but I never knew for sure. Leah drew her dagger and I drew the 45, but we both stayed behind Iota. He looked at Jaya and mouthed,
"Behind the door."
She nodded. Iota rapped with his big, dirty knuckles.
"Anyone at home? May we come in?"
Without waiting for an answer, he turned the knob, gold, of course, and drove his shoulder into the door. It flew back, and there was a grunt from behind it. Iota pulled the knob toward him, then slammed the door back again. Another grunt. A third time. A fourth. The grunt stopped. A fifth. Radar was barking. When I pulled the door toward him again, the man who had been standing behind it fell out in a heap on the thick red rug that covered the floor of the foyer. His forehead, nose, and mouth were bleeding. In one hand, he held a long knife. When he turned his face up to look at us, I recognized one of the men from the VIP box, the one with the scar on his cheek who had been whispering to Petra. He raised the knife and flailed out with it, laying a shallow cut across Iota's hairy shin.
None of that, kiddie,
I said, and stepped on the scarred man's wrist, bearing down until the man's hand opened and the knife dropped to the rug. I picked it up and tucked it into Mr. Bowditch's concho belt opposite the holster. Leah dropped to her knees beside the scarred man. He recognized her and smiled. Blood oozed from his split lips.
"Princess Leah, I am Jeff. Once I put a bandage on your arm when you cut it, do you remember?"
She nodded.
"And once I pushed your little pony trap out of a mud hole. There were three of us, but my love for you was strong, and I pushed the hardest. Do you remember that as well?"
She nodded again.
"I never wanted to be a part of this, I swear to you, Princess. Will you let me go in memory of the old days when you were a child and Lilimar was fair?"
She nodded that she would indeed let him go, and plunged her dagger up to the hilt into one of his upstaring eyes. 6. There was no electricity in the apartment today, but the scarred man, Jeff, J-E-F-F, or maybe he spelled it G-E-O-F-F, had turned the gas lights partway up so he could see to do his dirty work. My guess is he hadn't expected five of us, or for us to know where he was lying in wait. Not to mention the snab, a cricket buckaroo riding on my dog's back. Eris found the little brass lever that controlled the gas and turned the jets up to full. We found Kellen, in the next room, lying on an enormous canopied bed. The chamber was dark. His hands were clasped on his chest. His hair was combed back and he was wearing the same red velvet smoking jacket he'd had on when he interrogated me. A faint blue haze hung around him. It looked like eyeshadow on his closed lids. He didn't stir as we approached and stood around his stolen bed. Never had an old man looked so dead, and he soon would be. I didn't know if there was running water in the toilet cubicle I saw to the left of the room, but there was surely a pump. I thought my old friend the Lord High could use a good bath. Jaya and Eris spoke at the same time. Jaya,
where's the snab?
Eris,
what's that sound?
It was a mix of chattering and squeaking, punctuated by quick, sharp hisses. As the sound approached, Radar began to bark. Did I notice how pale Iota had become when I turned toward the living room to see what was coming? I think so, but I'm not sure. Most of my attention was on the bedroom doorway. The snab entered in two springy leaps, then jumped aside. What followed were the hidden denizens of the palace's walls and dark places. A flood of enormous gray rats. Jaya and Eris both screamed. Leah couldn't, but she backed away against the wall, eyes wide and hands raised to the scar of her mouth. I had no doubt the snab had summoned them. It was, after all, the Lord of Small Things. Although most of the rats were bigger than it was. I stepped back from the bed. Iota stumbled, and I grabbed him. He was breathing rapidly, and I should have known then that something was wrong with him, but I was watching the rats. They swarmed up the dangling bedclothes and onto the body of the Lord High. His eyes flashed open. They were almost too bright to look at. The aura around him changed from pale blue to a deeper, purer shade. The first wave of rats were fried when they entered it. The stink of cooking meat and burning fur was atrocious, but they didn't stop. Fresh troops squirmed over the bodies of their dead comrades, chittering and biting. Kellen struggled to throw them off. An arm rose from the boiling rat pile and began to beat at them. One was clinging to his thumb, swinging back and forth like a pendulum, its tail wrapped around his bony wrist. There was no blood, for Kellen had none to give. I could see blue light giving occasional blinks through the rats covering him. He screamed, and a rat the size of a full-grown tomcat tore off his upper lip, exposing his gnashing teeth. And still the rats came, pouring through the bedroom doorway and surging up the bed until the Lord High was buried beneath a living, biting blanket of fur and tails and teeth. There was a thud beside me as Iota collapsed in the corner of the room, across from where the three women cowered and Radar barked. Leo was holding Raid's collar with both hands. White foam was coming from the corners of Iota's mouth and dripping down his chin. He looked up at me and tried to smile.
Boy.
For just a moment, I thought he was talking about the Hawaiian delicacy. Then I understood the word he couldn't finish. There was a muffled explosion and a flash of light. Rats, some on fire, some only smoldering, flew in all directions. One hit me in the chest and slid down my tattered shirt, leaving a trail of guts behind. The women who could vocalize screamed again. I heard the snab's wing start making that distinctive cricket sound. The rats obeyed at once, reversing direction and flowing back the way they'd come, leaving hundreds of bodies behind. Kellen's bed was littered with guts and soaked with rat blood. Kellen himself was a disassembled skeleton below a grinning skull lying askew on a silk pillow. I tried to pick Iota up, but he was far too heavy for me.
Eris, I shouted. Eyes down! Help me! It's bad!
She made her way through the diminishing tide of rats, hopping and crying out when they ran over her feet, but not a single one bit her, or any of us. Leah followed. Jaya hung back, then she came too. I got Iota under the arms. Eris took one leg, Leah the other. We carried him, trying not to trip over the last few rats, including one with no back legs but still pulling itself gamely along after its fellows.
Sorry,
Iota said. His voice was guttural, coming from a throat that was rapidly closing up. Foam flew.
Sorry. Wanted to see it through.
Shut up and save your breath. We laid him on the long blue sofa. He began to cough, spewing more curds of foam into Leah's face as she knelt to brush his hair back from his sweating forehead. Jaya grabbed a doily or some such thing from the unicorn table and wiped away some of the mess. Leah didn't seem to notice. Her eyes were fixed on Iota's. What I saw in hers was kindness and pity and mercy. He tried to smile at her, then looked at me.
It was on the blade of his knife. An old trick.
I nodded, thinking of how carelessly I'd shoved that knife into the concho belt. If I'd even nicked myself, I wouldn't be the only one foaming at the mouth. He looked back at Leah. He raised his arm very slowly as if it weighed 100 pounds and touched the heel of his palm to his forehead.
My queen, when the time comes, do your duty.
His hand dropped. So Iota, whom I'd first seen clinging to the bars of his cell like a monkey, passed away. After all he'd been through, and big man though he was, took but one tiny cut on the shin to do for him. His eyes were open. Leah closed them, bent, and pressed the scar of her mouth to one stubbly cheek. It was the best she could do for a kiss. Then she got up and pointed to the door. We followed, stepping around the corpses of a few rats that had died on the way out. She stopped before going into the corridor, looked back, and put her hands to her throat. Iota spoke one last time, as Falada had spoken, and the Snab.
The Queen of Empus will do her duty. This I swear.